Welcome to Radio Physics, a collaboration with the Aspen Center for Physics, KDNK Community Radio in Carbondale, and advanced physics students from Roaring Fork Valley High Schools. The students spend a week working at the center during the summer and get to talk one-on-one to some of the distinguished physicists who are here. I'm Patty Fox, and I'm hosting today's program, which was recorded during the teen summer program at the Aspen Center for Physics. With me today are Hannah George from Aspen High School, Sophia Nelson from Glenwood Springs High School, and Charles F. Stevens from the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California. Dr. Stevens received an MD degree from Yale University, which makes him an unusual physicist, and then a PhD in biophysics from Rockefeller University. His varied career has evolved from molecular biology to being one of the only researchers in the world trying to formulate a complete list of the principles that govern organization in brains, both large, as in humans, and small, as in goldfish. His research encompasses an area called scalable architecture, the idea that something can gain more properties simply by making it bigger. Chuck is also a frequent participant and former chairman of the board of the Aspen Center for Physics. Welcome, Dr. Stevens. Can we call you Chuck?
Of course.
Thank you, Chuck. It's always a pleasure talking to you. My name's Sophia. This is my fourth radio show. My first question to you is, did you always want to become a physicist?
No. I had no idea what I wanted to become.
What did you want to become?
Well, I always thought I wanted to become a doctor, and part of the reason was that when I was like 5 years old or something like that, there was a program on the radio in those days before television. There was a program on the radio that featured a doctor, and I had the idea that maybe it would be nice to be the kind of doctor that flies around in an airplane different places and cures people. And so I just sort of settled into that idea, but I had no idea what a doctor did. I mean, nothing really. Actually, it's an interesting thing, because when you go to college, you don't know what you want to do. I mean, some people do, but most people don't. But if you know you're going to be a doctor, it kind of takes away all the decisions. And so it makes life easier for you. You don't have to worry so much.
My name is Hannah George, and this is my first radio show. And as someone who thinks she would like to go into college to be a doctor, why did you decide to switch to neurobiology? What's the appeal?
Well, I started, when I got to medical school finally, I went to college and then I went to medical school. And when I got to medical school, I was starting to learn about neurobiology. And at Yale, in the medical school there, you could do more research than any other school at the time. There were fewer scheduled class hours than any other medical school. And everybody there had to do a thesis. That was called the Yale system at the time. And so I wanted to do research. I was a psychology major in college, and I got interested in how the brain works. So I started doing that when I was in medical school. And I did it. I remember my first year in medical school, I spent all day Wednesday working in a laboratory. And I really liked doing it, and I didn't know anything about medicine. I remember being very interested in how interesting physiology was, because I didn't even know what physiology was. It was a brand new thing for me. And as time went on, I got more and more interested in doing research. Then when I started the clinical years of medical school, I absolutely loved seeing patients and learning about medicine. And so it was a very, very hard decision what to do, exactly how to divide my life up. And finally, what it came down to was that I really wanted to do research in neurobiology more than I wanted to be a doctor. And so I thought I couldn't do both. The kind of medicine I liked and the kind of research I liked just didn't match up. I felt like I had to do the best I could for my patients. I had to know everything I could, but I also had to know everything I could to do my research. And there wasn't enough time in the day. And so I finally decided that I would just go to graduate school and learn the things I hadn't learned, that I should have learned.
Thank you. So your research here is about the brain. Can you tell us more about like what you're researching right now?
So one of the big problems in neuroscience is how learning and memory works. And part of what I'm doing is related to that. The other thing that I'm doing is related to a particular parts of the brain that are used in special ways. There are three different brain regions that are used in special ways, and they all have something in common. And I'm trying to understand what that thing in common between the three different areas is, so I can understand what computation the brain works. What does it actually compute?
For us and for the audience, just to help with an introduction, could you explain the concept of scalable architecture and why it's so important?
Yes. What I'm doing now is I do work some on scalable architecture, but since last time I talked to Patty, I have sort of changed what I'm doing. And so I can tell you about scalable architecture, and it's something that's very important, but what I'm actually doing now is something a little bit different. And I can tell you the kind of thing it is, so you can understand what kind of questions I'm asking. Yeah, I'll tell you as much as you want about scalable architecture, but I'd rather talk about what I'm doing.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. That's probably more important.
Yeah. Okay, so there's 7 billion faces in the world, and you have to be able to learn to recognize any one of those faces. No way you're going to learn 7 billion, but there's no face that you can't learn to recognize. You have to be able to. And you can recognize a face. If you see one that you know, you can recognize that face in well less than a second. And if I show you pictures of faces, flash, 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 5 a second, and I stick a picture of Bill Clinton in the list, all the ones you've never seen, you would tell me, oh, Bill Clinton just went past. And so you have to be able to recognize a face in a fraction of a second. And you have to be able to learn that face. And so what I'm working on is how you make a little tag for the face that you can use for learning, so that you don't have to know all the details about the face. You can just make a little a code for the face that you can learn to recognize. And that's so the question I'm asking is, how do we learn to recognize faces, and how can we do it so fast? For computers these days, there's face recognition software, and computers have gotten quite good at recognizing faces. What they do is they make 10,000 measurements of the face, how wide it is between the eyes, how long the nose is, how wide the mouth is, how wide the head is, how high the forehead is. They make 10,000 measurements. And then they compare those 10,000 measurements with the same 10,000 measurements on a lot of faces, and they find the ones that are most similar. And the mystery is, how in the world can we make all of those measurements and be able to then recognize that face and recognize a face that you haven't seen before? So that's the question I'm asking.
How will your research affect the people or the world?
Okay.
Benefits
yeah. people, yes. Research. I think I have done things that have been of benefit, and that's the normal thing. That's what I thought I wanted to do when I started, and that's the normal thing that people do want to do. They want to have an effect on the world. But as you go along, what you learn is that oftentimes if you try on purpose to specifically solve some question that is going to be helpful to people, it doesn't usually work because yeah. you don't know enough. Mm-hmm. You have to learn more things.
Yeah.
And so what I do is very basic research, and I don't do applied research. I have done some, and I hope it's been useful, but I'm not motivated by by doing research that is designed to be helpful. I'm motivated to do research that's learned to help us understand something, so down the road we can make an effect. And I'll give you an example. A long time ago, like roughly 50 years ago, Jim Watson and Francis Crick discovered the code that discovered the structure of DNA. At the time they did it, they had no idea what it was good for. They didn't know that it was good for anything. They knew that they needed to understand the structure of DNA so that you could learn how genes are kept and encoded. They had no idea. It took roughly 50 years for them to start having an effect on the world. But you have a much bigger effect if you can really learn something that's very fundamental rather than kind of patching things together. Mm-hmm. And so my goal is, the thing that motivates me is to learn to understand things and then hope that you can figure out something much more practical to do with them. And this problem of faces is a very general kind of problem because you have an object like a face, and that object depends on many numbers. And the way we talk about it is that recognizing a face is putting a point in a high-dimensional space. What does that mean? If you measure two distances, that can tell you where a space is on a two-dimensional map. Mm-hmm. If you measure three distances, you can measure where you are on a three-dimensional map. You can know what a point is. But for a face, you have to measure 10,000 dimensions. Mm-hmm. You have to measure a 10,000-dimensional space. That's big. And it's a harder problem to figure out how you represent, how you understand where something is in a very high-dimensional space. And so the problems that I'm working on, I use faces as an example, but the problems I'm working on are how it is that we, and not just us, other animals too, all animals, can recognize complex objects by encoding them as a point in a very high dimensional space. And so there are a lot of things this could be used for. It could even be used for making computers better. Maybe not help a person, but help a computer or help us use a computer better. So that's the big question is that. And I can tell you whatever more examples or something like that if you'd like to know.
Yeah. Well, now that you've started talking about animals, and now that you've switched from that scalable architecture concept to studying faces, are you still using goldfish as your model, or are you looking at other animals too?
I love goldfish, and I still do study them, but I don't. I actually started 2 years ago, just 2 years ago, working on an even simpler animal, which is a fruit fly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the fruit fly does exactly the same thing we do with faces, except it does it with odors.
Huh.
A fruit fly can learn to recognize any odor, and it can learn to avoid it or approach it. And an odor is a point in a high-dimensional space because it takes 50 numbers to represent the odor. There are 50 different odorant receptors, and those 50 receptors, each one gives nerve impulses to odors, and each one gives a different pattern of 50 nerve impulses, different frequencies of nerve impulses. It gives a special pattern for each one. Every odor is different. And so the fly has to learn to recognize a particular point in this 50-dimensional space. It's not 10,000 like a human face recognition system, but it's the same problem. And in a lot of times, what's good to do is start with a really simple version where you know a lot, And for the fly, we know exactly how it does everything. And so it's a good place to start, and that's what I did. And I did that for last year and year before last. And then this year, I'm moving on to a more complicated problem that's also much simpler. That's what I'm doing this summer, this particular summer.
Oh, wow.
You're listening to Radio Physics. Hannah George from Aspen High School and Sophia Nelson from Glenwood Springs High School are interviewing Charles F. Stevens of the Salk Institute in La Jolla. He is an MD and biophysicist and working on very unique problems of human recognition and odor recognition from fruit flies. And I'd like to say also that when you're listening to Radio Physics, most of these physicists that we are interviewing have a online presence, and you can go into Google any of them and come up with some very interesting and deep ideas that are being researched by the physicists. So back to the interview.
So I was wondering, how did you come across, like, how did you think of your theory?
How did I work it out?
Yeah.
Well, I was actually working before a little bit on mouse olfaction.
Okay.
And I had never read any of the fruit fly literature. And so I thought, well, gee, I should read about this. I started reading about it, and I was just amazed at what progress that I didn't know about it. But I didn't realize what progress they had made. And the people who were working on olfaction and flies had learned just about everything.
Wow.
And so I realized instantly that I had been thinking about things that I could apply to the fly much better than I could to the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, okay, I'll start there and try to figure out how the fly does this trick, and then find out if other parts of the brain, because there are three of them, that I think probably do the same thing. And turned out to be true, that the way I sort of thought of it was because I had been thinking about other things, and then when I got down to working on the fly, I had a lucky insight into how one of the ways it was working that made it much simpler.
Mm-hmm.
and it was just good luck.
One of the problems in the medical world today that's trying to be solved is issues with degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and dealing with memory loss.
Yes.
I know you've said previously that your goal is not to necessarily help people, but to find answers to questions and why things work. But do you think if you did find those answers, it would be able to help in this research and helping people overcome diseases like Alzheimer's and other memory loss problems?
Yeah. Well, for sure that somebody is going to figure out what the mechanism of Alzheimer's is. But the main ideas in the field haven't been working very well. There's been a lot of money spent and a lot of research done and a lot of drugs developed, and a lot of them just made it worse. They didn't make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we need is we just need a fresh look at it. And there are a lot of people who are doing this, and they have interesting new ideas. So one of the most recent ideas that two people have been looking into, some people in England and some people at Harvard Medical School, have come up with the notion and given evidence for that what's really causing Alzheimer's disease is a bad reaction to infections in the brain. That there's a mechanism for helping the brain protect itself, and in some cases this can go wrong. So this is one of the newest ideas. I have no idea when people are going to figure out, this is the real trick, this is how it's working. And they may not figure it out until they learn something else that they don't know yet, and they don't even need to know. and so you can't do it on a schedule. all you can do is do the best you can, and it may work and it may not, and it may work quickly or it may not work for a long time. And so it definitely will do it, and we know a lot more than we did, for sure, but we still don't quite know enough.
And I agree with that. Like, going back to the fundamentals and DNA, they just figured out DNA and they didn't know how to use it, but now we have the CRISPR thing. Yes. Where we can cut the DNA and we can make different genomes the way that we want to make them. And I think that over time and through mistakes, I feel like we learn too. Yeah. On theories and other interesting things that can affect our life. So, like, kind of changing subjects, how do you use physics in your study now?
So it turns out that there are methods, mathematical methods, that are in physics and mathematics that you can apply to the brain. And so some of the things that I do is I treat a problem in biology just exactly the way a physicist would treat that idea. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to give an easy example for this, but I'll give you one quick example, and that is, about 10 years ago, there was a new area of mathematics and computer science that is called compressed sensing. Compressed sensing is a trick that was developed mainly by a person named Terry Tao, and it was a way to compress an image so it takes up less space and you can still get it back. And there are ways, your camera has a way, your telephone's camera has a way of compressing pictures down, but this is a better way than people had ever thought of before. It's a way that you don't have to, it's much easier and faster to do it. It turned out that I was interested in this way, and I read about it. I learned about this particular mathematical technique, and then I realized that even though it was doing things not exactly the same way as the camera does it, or the way Terry Tao did it, but there was a way to apply the same notion that they used to figure out how the brain can make use of the same, how the brain does in fact make use of the same technique.
Wow, yeah.
And so it was something that somebody else figured out for a completely different reason. Mm-hmm. I learned about it and I realized, oh, I can use the same exactly the same mathematics that they use and understand how something in the brain works that you wouldn't know otherwise.
Yeah.
If you could give a piece of advice to upcoming students who are going to university like us this year who are interested in STEM fields, just one piece of advice, what would you give?
okay, I have a very good piece of advice, but I don't know how helpful it's going to be. And that is that the most important thing you can do is do what you like.
Definitely.
Because if you don't do what you like, if you don't have passion for what you do, then it's not going to work. And you can be a really good student, but you have to do something that you really enjoy doing. And it doesn't matter what it is. But if you enjoy it enough, you'll do well.
That is great advice. Thank you, Chuck. And I hope that the people who are listening, who are going on to university, will take it seriously. It doesn't really matter what you thought you were going to do or your parents wanted you to do. Just choose what you love, and you'll be productive and happy. You've been listening to Radio Physics with Chuck Stevens from the Salk Institute, an MD and biophysicist who's been working on the brains of humans, fruit flies, mice, goldfish, and on underlying principles of the brain and how it works. And we don't know what the long-term result of his research will be, but it will it will evolve in time. And with us today have been Sophia Nelson from Glenwood Springs High School and Hannah George from Aspen High School. Thank you for listening to Radio Physics, the last Tuesday of the month at 4:30.